Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Leslie Silvey, and we're going to talk about a lot of things about raising food and growing food, but mostly we're going to talk about raising sheep for meat. How did you initially get started in growing your own food and raising your own food and that sort of thing?
Well, my husband and I are part of the 1970s back to the land crowd, and part of what you did when you went back to the land was to have a garden and have chickens and raise your own food as much as possible. And we were lucky enough to move to a place that was an old homestead, so we had a built-in producing orchard on site when we got there, and barns and a house, and, you know, so we could focus on other things.
How big is the property that you have?
Our property is 240 acres, which sounds like a lot, but it's mostly steep, hillside, wooded. We only have about 15 acres of pasture, which is also steep. And if we're not careful, the furs will take over. So it's not all productive by any means.
So let's talk about the sheep, because that's one of the things that you're really involved with. What breed do you raise and why that breed?
We currently raise Katahdins, which were bred in the state of Maine in the late 70s and became an official breed in the late 80s. They are a blend of your traditional meat breeds like the Suffolk and the Hampshire and the African and Virgin Island hare sheep. Now, what makes a hare sheep is that they don't have wool, or they have some wool, but they shed it on their own every year. Voila, no more shearing.
You sound very happy about that aspect.
Oh, I am very happy. We got into sheep in 1990 with the traditional Suffolk Hampshire cross type meat sheep, and shearing became increasingly difficult, not only our attempts at it, but just to find a shearer and have somebody come out and do it. So we switched in 2007 to the Katahdins, and we're very happy. You not only don't shear them, you don't have to dock their tails. They cock their tails out of the way when necessary, so you don't have to be concerned about manure buildup under the tail.
That sounds like a good breed to have.
Yes, and they birth pretty easily, and they're good mothers. They tend towards multiples, many of them, and they come in a wide range of colors, white, brown, black, spots, big patches. The color is fascinating and the least important aspect of picking out a good one.
But it's kind of nice, too, because you can remember who's who, sort of.
You'd be surprised. You think you've got it nailed, and some of the color fades as the animal gets older. You're identifying somebody by that brown spot on the middle of their back, and pretty soon you can barely see that brown spot because it's faded out. So it can be tricky.
Now, what do sheep eat? And the reason I say that, I know it sounds like, well, that's an obvious thing, they eat grass. But, you know, there's that whole John Wayne, you know, movie thing about the sheep herders versus the cattle herders, the cattle ranchers. And, you know, they like hated each other. And the thing that the cattle ranchers would always say is the sheep ate everything all the way down, ate the roots and everything, and really killed the ground.
Cattle eat grass at a higher height than the sheep. The sheep prefer the 3 to 6 inch range. You ideally shouldn't let them graze it below 3 inches. So it's not really the sheep, it's the herders, the shepherds' problem of getting the sheep moved in the appropriate time so that they don't eat everything way down, because yes, they will. And they will also do some browsing. They're not like goats. They're not going to browse tremendously, but they will eat some fir needles on the smaller trees. The ram who lives in our orchard is a little bit rough on some of the younger, smaller fruit trees that we've added to the orchard. We have to fence them away from those. Even then, I can see him climbing the fence and reaching as high as he can for some of those fruits.
Well, you can't blame him.
Oh, you can't blame him. It's like candy.
So let's talk about when you're raising them and you're raising them for meat, because, you know, one of the things that I always think of when I hear about sheep is the idea of eating, are you eating lamb or are you eating mutton? And as I understand it, lamb are pretty young animals.
Lamb, in my understanding, is under a year old. Mutton is over a year old. One of the things we like about the Katahdins, they're a very mild lamb. So we have eaten lots of mutton, and actually most of our customers are very anxious to get as much mutton as possible. Now, when we have an older animal, like I have a ewe this year, she bought a ticket to the butcher because she had her second lambing this year. She had twins both times, and both times she abandoned one lamb. So I'm not keeping her. She's out.
Those are not genetics you want to be supporting.
Absolutely not. I have better things to do than bottle feed baby lambs. So she's going to the butcher, and I will have her all put into burger. And that's the way we like our mutton, is in burger form. Everybody who's tried it loves it.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Last year we sent a... He must have been 6, 7, 8-year-old Wether, which is a castrated male animal. Very fat, just big. He was delicious. You could not tell that mutton was any older than a 2-year-old animal.
So why would you keep a castrated male for 6 to 7 years?
Because sheep are flock animals. So you do not want to keep your ram alone. Your ram needs company. You can't put him in with any of the ewes because you don't want them bred except when you want them bred. So we keep him with a Wether.
So let's talk about the idea of those lambs because they're awfully cute.
Oh, and they're darling.
And then you're going to eat them. So, you know, people are curious about this because when you go to the butcher store, it's all packaged up. You don't have to think about how cute the animal was. You just buy it and take it home and cook it. How do you deal with that?
There's two things. One is that by the time they go to the butcher, they're not so cute. They're sort of obnoxious. It's like having a house full of teenagers, you know? You're done. The other thing is, don't name them.
Yeah.
No matter how cute they are, don't name them.
Yeah.
Because the first couple of years we started eating lamb that we were raising, we'd say, oh, who are we eating? Oh, this is Wooly. This is Baby. That's really hard.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah, that's understandable. Now, do you process the animals yourself? Do you kill them and butcher them?
No, we do not. We take our animals to Redwood Meats. We have them slaughtered there. And we currently have them sent from Redwood down to Ferndale Meats. Kurt at Ferndale Meats has been terrific to work with. And he does all the cut and wrap. And our customers can get it cut and wrap any way they want. Roast, chops, shanks, ribs, ground, stew, whatever.
Yeah, he's really good to work with. I did
terrific.
A half a pig with him, and it worked out really well. And, you know, he's pretty patient with those of us who really have no idea about cuts of meat.
What you're doing, right. He always gives me a bad time because I prefer to get most of mine in stew and burger form. And he just can't believe that I'm not getting loin chops and leg roast and things like that. But
I did the same thing with the pig. I didn't do any hams. And people are like, you didn't do any hams?
Right.
It's like, no. We're not big ham eaters,
right.
You know.
Well, one reason I like a lot of stew meat is because I like to cook my lamb in Middle Eastern type recipes. And most of it will call for taking the leg of lamb or the roast and cutting it up into 2-inch chunks of stew meat. Well, why should I do that? I could let Kurt do that.
Really? Especially you know ahead of time what you're going to be using it for.
Yes.
So have you ever processed your own?
No.
Okay.
I do my own chickens, but I don't do my own sheep.
How did you learn to do your own chickens?
Books. Our neighbors, when we moved out there, the woman there had grown up on the property there. She'd raised chickens her whole life. And they came over the first year we butchered chickens. They came over and went through the process with us. And I've been doing it ever since. I've simplified it a little. I don't pluck. I simply skin. It's a lot easier.
That sounds interesting. Okay. Well, we've run out of time, but I'd like to come back next week and talk to you a little bit more about this.
Sounds good.
This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Leslie Sylvie.
Grapes and the cakes. Hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.